It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Sandy Rios with you this morning, and of course you're hearing everywhere there's going to be a hurricane in Florida or the eastern seaboard of the United States, and I'm not going to talk about it very much because all you have to do is turn your radio on. They will tell you endless amounts of stories about it. Fox is covering it, Pillar to Post, and so are the other networks, so you can get your information there. The only thing that I could say about it is, you know, you can, like, empty water bottles and put tap water in it. You can actually create your own water. I keep hearing these stories about people not being able to find water. Well, you know, there's water in the tap. That's what we used to drink all the time. Our water in the United States is drinkable. You can do that. And so that's my practical tip to you. And of course, the hurricane is no laughing matter, except that I do find myself a bit annoyed that it is beaten like a dead horse. You know, just don't we have common sense? Can't we just hear it a few times and put 2 cents together and figure out that we have to take precautions? You know, it just gets overblown. But of course, those of you down in Houston who've been through Harvey might disagree with me. I recognize that because you've been hit so hard and you think people should be warned. I'd be interesting to know what you do think about that. I don't have time to open the phone lines for that, but I'm just saying. And the practical thing that we can do right now, of course, is help 8 Days of Hope. They are busy now gathering volunteers and resources, and already, of course, are down in the Houston area helping people down there. So one hurricane at a time here. And so if you would like to help with Harvey, you can do that by calling, and specifically 8 Days of Hope. And they're going to be, it's equipment that they have bought to dry out these homes and start restoring them. And I'm sure that can be applied, you know, to the East Coast as soon as they finish in Texas. So I'm sure your donation will have much broader application than Harvey. Could be applied in future hurricanes, including the one that's getting ready to hit. The phone number is 877-616-2396. That's 877-616-2396. Or go to AFR.net and give your most generous donation. And if you want to go join them as a volunteer, you can do that. Go to 8daysofhope.com. Go to their website and they'll show you how to do that. The most important news story that happened yesterday, I'm going to get to that in just a second. I'm going to set it up a little bit here. We've been hearing for days, those of us that are watching what's going on in D.C., and some of you are getting some of this too. You know that the debt ceiling had to be dealt with. We're $20 trillion in debt, and the proposal was to raise it another $2 trillion, which that's just another $2 trillion on the fire. What difference does it make? And I don't need to belabor the fact that I've told you we are nearing a financial crisis, and it's true that people in D.C. don't want to face it. They just want to keep spending, and at some point, we are going to go over the cliff. There's just no question about it, and the crazy thing about it is that neither House leaders, meaning Republicans, or Senate leaders, meaning Republicans, McConnell or Ryan, want to do any kind of budget cuts. So here they are. We had heard the well-founded rumors that they were going to giving money to the victims of Harvey in Texas to raising the debt ceiling, with the argument that if we don't do that, we will default, we won't be able to help them. It's a false argument, completely false argument, yet they were prepared to make it. And then, of course, there's the issue of funding the government. That's a different issue, a budget around which the government forms, each agency decides what to spend. The Republican leadership has done nothing to reduce the budget. They haven't cut anything. And they don't want to. It's just an astounding set of circumstances. So consider it even more astounding when yesterday the President of the United States did this. Peter Doocy will bring the report. Let's listen.
Today was a good day in a generally very partisan town.
Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer is saying that because Democrats got what they wanted today when President Trump agreed with Schumer and House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi to attach short 3-month debt limit and government funding measures to a Harvey relief bill.
It'll avoid default and it'll fund the government, avoiding a shutdown.
By siding with Schumer, the president defied Speaker Ryan, who wanted a long-term debt limit increase.
We've got all this devastation in Texas. We've got another unprecedented hurricane about to hit Florida, and they want to play politics with a debt ceiling?
But a source with knowledge of the deal tells Fox News this short-term plan gets Harvey funding faster and delays fights over the budget and debt, so they can focus more on tax reform.
We essentially came to a deal, and I think the deal will be very good.
But that deal is tough to swallow for the conservatives in the House Freedom Caucus.
Yeah, this is certainly not the best option. It's, typical Washington, D.C., kick the can down the road.
It's not just Republicans in the House who have issues with the new plan. Senator Ben Sasse simply says, quote, the Pelosi-Schumer-Trump deal is bad. And when reports first surfaced that Democratic leadership would help deliver votes for Harvey relief in exchange for a short debt limit hike, Senator Orrin Hatch lashed out.
Oh, I think that's just total BS. It just shows that Democrats are not serious legislators.
Emergency agencies are spending money responding to Harvey at an astronomical rate and seem pleased with any deal to keep funds coming.
I think that it's important that as we move forward on fixing the problems of our country, that we work collaboratively between the executive and congressional branch.
As for Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, he says he understands why President Trump gave Democrats a win today.
His feeling was that we needed to come together to not create a picture of divisiveness at a time of genuine national crisis.
All right, so that ended abruptly. That's Peter Doocy's report. I think this is complex, and I don't claim to have all the answers. I'll just tell you what I think at this point. I think that President Trump is so fixated on tax relief and tax reform that he wanted to get this perfect storm of three issues coming up in September out of the way and off the table. And it played right into the Democrats' hands because they got everything they wanted. But on the other hand, they didn't really. I actually think that the Republicans got everything they wanted. I think that Senator McConnell is not upset because it actually takes the pressure off him. And Ryan's not all that. He may act upset. But I think the reason that he's upset is because he wanted to delay the debt ceiling. He wanted to raise the debt ceiling for 18 months, and that would mean past the 2018 elections. So President Trump has created this now situation where in December, just before Christmas, it's going to come again. And this is the argument that will be used because it always is. Hey, we have to get home for Christmas vacation, and we have to decide quickly. We've got to make a decision. We can't shut down the government. We can't default on our loans. And so here it goes again with the potential of raising the debt ceiling even higher. And the problem for the House Freedom Caucus and for conservatives is that the leverage for making any kind of reductions in government spending is the debt ceiling, because it's not popular to raise it. People understand you have a budget. I have a budget. We understand that you can't just spend and spend and spend and spend without there being a consequence. And so this has been a good way for there to be some forced budget cuts in the past, but that just seems to be off the table, out the door. Democrats are getting everything they want. And by the way, no wall funding, zero, zip, zed, nada. So what do I think? I'm not sure. I think a lot of people are reeling right now trying to figure this out. John Roberts had an additional report that I want you to hear. Let's listen.
In Mandan, North Dakota today, President Trump kept up the drumbeat for tax reform.
We need tax reform that is pro-growth, pro-jobs, pro-worker, pro-family, and yes, pro-American. And anybody that's going to vote against tax cuts and tax reforms, whether it's in North Dakota or anybody else or any place else, You got to vote against them and get them out of office.
The president is banking on bipartisan support to make his proposal a reality, bringing with him on Air Force One North Dakota Democratic Senator Heidi Heitkamp.
Everyone's saying, what's she doing up here? But I'll tell you what, good woman, and I think we'll have your support. I hope we'll have your support.
The problem with that is that Heidi Heitkamp is up for re-election this year, and she is very vulnerable. And the president featured her on the stage and just said what he said. So that's troubling for Republicans who are trying to keep and maintain or even get a larger majority in the Senate. So that's the first part. And the second part's equally troubling, John Roberts. Let's listen, cut three.
Bipartisanship was on the president's mind today, meeting this morning with both the Republican and Democratic congressional leadership to discuss the fall agenda, Hurricane Harvey relief, the debt ceiling, and keeping the government funded.
We have many, many things that are on the plate.
Also on the table this morning, the president's decision to rescind the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program. Just before their meeting, Senator Chuck Schumer tore a strip off President Trump.
Let me say this. I want to cut to the chase. The president's decision to end DACA was heartless and it was brainless. If this order stands, hundreds of thousands of families will be ripped apart.
Aboard Air Force One, following the meeting, President Trump had a far more collegial assessment of where things stand.
We discussed that also today, and Chuck and Nancy would like to see something happen, and so do I. And I said, if we can get something to happen, we're going to sign it and we're going to make it. You're going to make a lot of happy people.
But the president also sowed a little confusion last night in response to the firestorm of criticism leveled at him for rescinding DACA, tweeting, quote, Congress now has 6 months to legalize DACA, something the Obama administration was unable to do. If they can't, I will revisit this issue. The tweet suggested that the president might give Congress an out if they fail to enact a DACA fix. Asked about what he meant this afternoon, President Trump was playing coy.
Well, we're going to see what happens. I want to see what happens in Congress. I have a feeling that's not going to be necessary. I think they're going to make a deal. I think Congress really wants to do this.
Today, 15 states, including the president's home state of New York.
All right, that's enough. Because I need to jump in here. So the problem, of course, is after Attorney General Sessions laid out the case for why DACA is illegal, why the order was illegal, handing it back to Congress, and why we must have laws, the president really pretty much sort of interjected himself again. And remember, he had already said that he felt his sympathies went toward DACA because he lives in a world where he's hearing about what many people are hearing. They're hearing about these dreamers, all these kids that have come over and they're just innocent. And how can we do that? And he's got a soft heart. But the reality is very different. And so I guess maybe he needs to sit down with a briefing from his attorney general so that he has a better understanding. By the way, Daniel Horowitz has a really good article on this that we'll put on our Facebook page. Enough with DACA. Where's the sympathy for these Americans? And he talks about, you know, what about the American dreamer? We have kids that are dreamers, too. We have nearly 800,000 so-called dreamers taking American jobs. By stats, 90% of them are working. So that means that 90% those jobs could be done by Americans, but they're not being done. Illegal aliens account for 13.6% of all offenders sentenced for crimes committed in the United States, even though they only represent 3.5% of the population, 5%. A lot of the dreamers have been convicted of criminal acts. A lot of people have come in claiming to be dreamers that are not. It's a situation that has been abused, and we do not owe to non-citizens what we give to our citizens, and we certainly don't offer it to them at the detriment of our own dreamers, our own kids, our own people. And yet that's the twisted logic that's being portrayed. All right, so things to be concerned about as usual. Today we have Dr. Jeffress joining us in the last segment, but coming up next, Frank Gaffney will talk to us about a new poll that just came out about what about the loss of free speech? What about the fact that you and I can't say what we think without fear of losing our jobs or our status or our friendships with our neighbors? What about free speech? Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
So What would you do with an extra $500 a month in your budget? $500. This isn't hypothetical, by the way. This is something you may need to think about very soon if you decide to become a member of MediShare. MediShare is a way to pay for your health care, and typically it costs $500 less per month for a family versus other health care plans. So seriously, think about this. You could pay off loans, pay down a mortgage, save the money for retirement, donate to charity. That would be a big deal. But you know what? Here's the best thing. MediShare works. It has 250,000 members, and it's growing fast. With MediShare, not only do you save, you don't have to pay for things you don't believe in either, and that is a beautiful thing too. So here's how you can find out more, and you might actually wind up saving even more than $500 a month. So check into it. Here's the number. Call 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23, now available in Montana. 855-PSALM-23.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. We've all seen the devastation that's taken place on the Gulf Coast, Texas, Louisiana. 8 Days of Hope is a ministry that's been around since 2005, and we've had a great working relationship with Steve Tiber and his team since they were founded in response to Katrina. We are now recommending that you make a gift to American Family Association, and we are going to write one check to 8 Days of Hope. I promise you 100% of the money donated during these 3 days will be given to 8 Days of Hope so they can do their work. None of it will be taken out. We simply want to help, and we wanted to recommend a trustworthy ministry for you to support.
Here's a chance to help the victims of Hurricane Harvey. The phone lines are open. Call 877-616-2396. That's 877-616-2396. Or visit AFR.net.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Peter Koh, and I'm a business major, and this is my junior year at the college. What I love about the athletics here at Truett McConnell University is the coaches and their side of trying to teach sports from a biblical mindset with sportsmanship involved, and it really changes the way that you pursue the game, not just passionately doing it for other people, but also for yourself and to glorify God in that, which is completely different from most other schools.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
Some of the nation's most prominent conservative and Christian organizations are urging national news outlets to stop using material from Southern Poverty Law Center. The Southern Poverty Law Center is a notorious, agenda-driven, far-left nonprofit group known for publishing a map of so-called hate groups. But in reality, many of the groups targeted by the SPLC are evangelical Christian organizations, groups like American Family Association and Family Research Council, all listed as hate groups because they support traditional marriage. In 2012, a domestic terrorist used the SPLC list to attack Family Research Council headquarters in Washington, injuring a guard. Now conservatives and Christians are fighting back, sending a letter to every news agency in the nation urging them to no longer use Southern Poverty Law Center material. It's time to stop the fake hate list. I'm Todd Starnes.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Sandy Rios back with you. Let me echo what Todd Starnes just said. Yes, the letter just went out. It's signed by faith-based leaders, including Tim Wildman, the president of AFA. I've signed the letter, of course, also. And we are asking, demanding, really, that media resources, media outlets around the country stop using the SPLC's hate list. Not only was it the resource for Floyd Corkin, who nearly committed mass murder in the headquarters of the Family Research Council, but it also was, it sounds as though it was the inspiration, in part, for the shooter, the attempted mass murder of the Republican congressman at the ball field, and certainly the nearly deadly shooting of Steve Scalise. It's a serious situation, and it all goes back to the attempt to shut conservatives up, to label conservatives as haters, and to remove them from Facebook and remove them from ability to do business in the public arena, to exchange money, to have a presence online, to access, you know, the website and to post and make your case for the things that you stand for, all in the guise of fighting back against hate. And that's the danger. I've asked Frank Gaffney to join me. He certainly knows all about this. Frank is the president and founder of the Center for Security Policy. Frank, first of all, good morning. Thanks for joining me.
Good morning. Frank, great to be with you, as always.
Yeah, if you were to describe and just give people a thumbnail sketch, they already are hearing about the attempts to squelch free speech on campus, the fact that, you know, the Berkeley president just canceled a free speech week last week because of the violence that done by Antifa. Can you expand it further? What are we seeing happening on attacks on free speech?
This is political warfare, Sandy, and that is in the service now of people who aren't simply interested in suppressing the free speech of people like you and me and our organizations and so many others. They're interested in denying Americans more generally that constitutional right, free expression, but on the way to getting at others that they don't much cotton to either, including, I think, freedom of religion. There's been a lot of suppression of that, as you know, Sandy, notably, but not exclusively, in the United States military. There's also freedom of assembly. We're now seeing this pressure to not allow events, whether it's on campus or whether it's in the public square, because people consider them to be hateful. I mean, this is the project of a consortium, if you will. We've come to call it the Red-Green Axis, enabled by people like George Soros, who have put millions of dollars into various groups who are trying to take down our republic in this way, among others, and that have brought together in this bizarre alliance of sorts people on the hard left, among them prominently homosexuals, feminists, Jews, apostates, and other minorities, and Islamists who hate all of those people. The thing that they seem to have in common is they hate America more, and they're willing to work together to try to transform it, fundamentally transform it, as President Obama once famously said. And I fear that's what we're facing right now, and it's an ugly thing to be vilified without foundation as a hater. I know that feeling. You do too. It is coming from primarily a group called the Southern Poverty Law Center, which Todd's just talked about. Also, it's kind of mini-me, a group that is known as the Anti-Defamation League, that is very much pursuing the same kind of agenda, and that is to silence us on the road to fundamentally transforming us.
Well, and I think the point needs to be made, Frank, to people listening. It isn't just a matter, you know, it's not pleasant to be called a hater. Nobody likes that. But it's not just that. It is actually silencing, stopping, so that people listening to you and me, reading our information, the information of American Family Association, Family Research Council, and you fill in the blanks, because there are dozens and dozens of others of people that who are in danger of having their information shut off completely, their ability to communicate with the American public, all in the guise of the fact that they are allegedly haters. And then that, you know, the other thing, Frank, we've been led to believe through the media that there is a softening of America's view of their First Amendment rights. Most of the reporting's probably come out of colleges and universities, but we get the impression that being able to say what you think, the American standard, which we've valued for centuries, is no longer important. But you have just commissioned a poll by McLaughlin and Associates that shows something different, haven't you?
It was a very heartening poll, and we were among those who sponsored it. But it came to a conclusion, interestingly enough, Sandy, that was also determined in a previous poll, I think just a week or two ago, by Rasmussen. And both of them, John McLaughlin and the Rasmussen team, asked the people they were surveying essentially this question: do you believe that freedom of expression trumps the fear of offending people? And by a margin of 85% to 8%, even in the aftermath of these riots in Charlottesville, where much was made of the dangers of allowing people to say offensive things. The overwhelming majority of those sampled said all Americans are entitled to free speech, not just some of us. And I take great heart from that, Sandy, because, again, I think our country has been subjected, particularly in the millennial age cohort, to this idea that nothing is worse than giving offense to people, and you mustn't do it under any circumstances. And if that means circumscribing what you can say, or for that matter, what you can think, lest it be an animus towards other people. There was a resolution that was adopted unanimously in the United States Senate back in April that essentially said, you know, animus is right up there with hate incidents and hate speech and almost as bad as hate crimes, and we mustn't have anything like that going on in America. This is a classic slippery slope that gets you very quickly to not only the loss of your freedom of expression, but I think other fundamental constitutionally guaranteed freedoms that make us the republic we are.
Well, and of course, it's a knee-jerk reaction to what they're seeing in the news, and they are responding to this media-driven notion that anyone on the so-called right is a hater. And of course, they try to link that to Nazism, and I have to explain that the whole attribution of being on the right to Nazis was people who were loyal to country. And of course, Hitler equated that to superiority and the right to kill other people. When we as American right, we love our country too, but not because we think we have the right to kill other people or we're superior. We export goodness. We export help to others. It's a very different view of your country. But the whole attribution of all of us being on the right with the Nazis is where the confusion begins, don't you think, Frank?
Well, I don't think it's confusion so much as it's deception, Sandy. This is a case where people are defaming individuals and organizations with whom they don't agree. That's why I started my answer to your question initially as this is political warfare. When you look at a group like the Southern Poverty Law Center, for example, that is in the business of promoting this idea of hate groups and hate centers and, you know, hate speech, they're doing it for profit, for sure. They've got something on the order of $300 million, much of it in Cayman Island bank accounts, no less, which is a very squirrely thing. But beyond doing it for profit, they're doing it to advance a political agenda that is, I believe, antithetical to freedom. The irony of it being, you know, a group that A claims to be about poverty and about the law. This is antithetical to the law, the Constitution of the United States. And so I think the worst of it really is it's not just that it confuses people, it is that it misleads them into thinking that people who stand for what Americans do for freedom, for tolerance, for love, for the Constitution and the freedoms it guarantees and all the rest are somehow the enemy. Whether they're neo-Nazis or they're white supremacists or simple hate groups of other kinds, this is aimed at deceiving and, I believe, ultimately undermining our country. And it must be fought. It must be fought by all of us.
You know, I want to quote from a mutual friend. You know her better than I, for sure. Ayanat Hirsi Ali, who is an atheist but a former Muslim. So I say that she's an atheist because I want people to understand where she's coming from. Former Muslim, a victim of genital mutilation. She has spoken out so much against Islam that she has to have a 24/7 bodyguard. Her life has been threatened since she was, I think, a legislator in Holland. Her friend Theo van Gogh was murdered. Ayanat has been a warrior in every way for speaking the truth, even though we might not agree with her on everything. And she has been targeted by the SPLC as a person who hates.
They called her an extremist, with a bunch of the rest of us. And that's one of the things that makes so clear who we're dealing with here. They're saying that they actually implied that she was falsely claiming, as a Muslim, to have been female genitally mutilated. Now, Sandy, I got to tell you, I think that's so completely beyond the pale that it, in its own right, would be, you know, an indictment of the SPLC. But it's just one example of the kinds of things that are being said. And just to bring it right up to the minute, I've done my commentary for your program, which I guess people will be hearing shortly, about the senator from Minnesota, Al Franken, yesterday citing the SPLC as a basis for opposing the nomination of a distinguished law professor to the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals, Amy Barrett. This is again political warfare. It is not accurate in as far as I can tell, the case of the vast majority of the people who are being vilified, including AFA and FRC, as Todd Stern said, and certainly the Center for Security Policy. But they're doing it to take us out. And in the process, they're hoping to advance their larger agenda of taking out America.
You know, one of the things about this, back to the poll, so often we need to explain, Frank, that polls are done in order to prove a point, and the questions are skewed in order to get a result or to confuse people or to get a result that's desired. This time, you had a chance to write these questions. They're very clear. And the second question you ask on this is freedom of speech a fundamental right, or should it be restricted if it offends someone? And that just distilled the more lengthy question, and you still got an 85% response. People believe that freedom of speech is a fundamental right. That is heartening, isn't it?
It's enormously encouraging, especially since they've been subjected to so much this sort of mau-mauing by the left. Notably, you know, the kind of response Donald Trump got to simply pointing out that there are people like Antifa who are deeply problematic, as well as neo-Nazis and white supremacists. That's the kind of exercise of freedom of speech we have to protect, whether we agree with it or not, whether it offends some people or not. It's part and parcel of what makes America America, and it has to be protected and not subjected to this kind of political warfare to prevent us from exercising that fundamental freedom of speech. And you do it every day brilliantly, Sandy, and I'm so grateful that you do. But we've got to continue to have the ability to do that, notwithstanding this pressure.
Yes, and so that, thank you for that, Frank. But to be practical, a practical thing we could do, you referred to this resolution just passed, you know, emotionally passed, co-sponsored by Marco Rubio, Dianne Feinstein, Kamala Harris, Senate Resolution 118, condemning hate crime and any other form of racism, religious or ethnic bias, discrimination, incitement to violence, or animus. And you say that animus is a very dangerous term. And now it looks like they're going to pass one in the House as well, and they're trying to pass legislation to create sort of a niche for hate threats, not just hate crimes, but hate threats. Right. We are headed in a dangerous direction, aren't we?
Well, we are, if that's allowed to progress. I don't know that they will pass this kind of legislation, but if they don't, it will be primarily because people like your listeners stand up and are counted, and they let their legislative representatives know that they don't want our freedom of speech restricted. I'm sure that, like the vast majority of Americans, as demonstrated by these polls, they want no part of our freedom of speech being restricted, and they need to make sure that their elected representatives understand that as well.
All right, we're going to put this poll of Frank's organization, Center for Security Policy, which affects all of us, on our Facebook page, and this is the thing you can do. You can share it as many times as with as many people as you possibly can. We just need to generate, we need to encourage people that speaking the truth is still popular. And even though that's maybe not the important thing, we need to do it anyway. It's encouraging to all of us. So we're going to share the work of Center for Security Policy on our Facebook page so that you can share it. Frank's commentary is heard every day on this show. It is a treasure to us. It's coming up next, by the way. And for all information about what's happening on national security, Center for Security Policy. Frank, thanks for joining me this morning.
Always a pleasure, Sandy. Thank you.
Okay, talk to you soon. All right, coming up next, Dr. Robert Jeffress will join us from, he's in the studio, so it's going to be good, so don't go away. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
I did not send the prophets, yet they ran. I did not speak to them, yet they prophesied. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Corner. Imam Omar Shaheen of the Islamic Center of Davis in Northern California was caught on camera encouraging American Muslims to eliminate Jewish people and praying for the death of the Jewish people during a sermon in Arabic. Shaheen, who came to America in 1999, urged Muslims to terminate the Jewish people here in America because Muhammad said dealing death to the Jewish people was the duty of all Muslims, not just Muslims outside of America. And this is the religion of peace.
Listen to the Hamilton Corner, weekdays from 5 to 6 p.m. Central on AFR. For more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
This is Steve Conover inviting you to listen to the Friends of Israel Today each week on this station. Here's our host and Bible teacher, Chris Katulka.
Hey everybody, the Friends of Israel Today is a unique radio show that teaches biblical truth for changing times. We do this through Q&A, timely interviews, dramatic readings from the life of Holocaust survivor Zvi Kalischer, and of course, Bible teaching.
To learn more, visit foiradio.org.
Join us for Friends of Israel Today, Sunday morning at 11:30 Central. On American Family Radio.
Friendships is an all-volunteer ministry, helping the needy in the U.S. and abroad. There's an opportunity for you to care for Syrian war victims at Friendships Medical Field Clinic and Base in the Golan Heights. Among the positions available are doctors, nurses, dentists, interpreters, as well as personnel for operating the facility. For details, visit friendships.org or call 337-433-5022. Again, 337-433-5022.
You know, the Bible describes Jesus' last days on planet Earth. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman with American Family Association and American Family Radio. We're going to Israel, the Holy Land, March 8th through the 16th. And we'll be visiting those places that the Bible mentions in Jesus' last days, including his time in the Garden of Gethsemane, which is on the Mount of Olives. We're also going to go to the house of Caiaphas and see the very steps that Jesus walked on his way there from the Garden of Gethsemane. And then finally, that day we'll be going to the Via Dolorosa, the path that Jesus walked to the cross. So it's going to be a fantastic time in Israel as we see what happened to Jesus and we talk about the hope that we have in his resurrection. For more information, go to the website twholyland.com. That's twholyland.com. Or call 800-FAMILIES, option 5. 1-800-FAMILIES, option 5.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Al Franken is best known for his career as a comedian. What he did in his role as a U.S. Senator from Minnesota yesterday, though, was no joke. In a hearing to consider the nomination of Amy Barrett to become a judge on the 7th Circuit Court of Appeals, Senator Franken cited the radical leftist Southern Poverty Law Center to sully Professor Barrett's character and confirmation prospects. The nominee had spoken before the Conservative Alliance Defending Freedom, which the SPLC has smeared as a hate group. Fortunately, the public will not be amused at Franken's legitimating of a defamatory political warfare operation devoted to suppressing the constitutionally guaranteed freedom of speech of those with whom it disagrees. A new McLaughlin and Associates poll found that by a margin of 85% to 8%, respondents favor free speech, even if it offends some others. This is Frank Affney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Well, to piggyback on what Frank just alluded to, Amy Barrett is a law professor from Notre Dame. She was Phi Beta Kappa, graduate of Rhodes College, summa cum laude with multiple awards from Notre Dame. She clerked for the late Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia. And so Dianne Feinstein did her own set of comments and damage yesterday at the hearing, a little different than Al Franken, but no less dangerous. Let's listen.
When you read your speeches, the conclusion one draws is that the dogma lives loudly within you. And That's of concern when you come to big issues that large numbers of people have fought for years in this country.
All right, Cecilia, did you catch that? So Amy Comey Barrett is a Notre Dame professor. She's a strong Catholic, and she has expressed her views. I'm sure she hasn't taught Catholic doctrine, but Senator Feinstein now is saying, alluding, and hinting, and so is Al Franken, that she is somehow unqualified to be a Seventh Circuit justice because she has strongly held views, Catholic views. When you read your speeches, the conclusion one draws is that the dogma lives loudly within you. And this is not the first time, and I had actually forgotten this, although I was in D.C. when this happened, and I heard it. I should have remembered this. 14 years ago, Dianne Feinstein, I was at CWA at the time, and I was actually in the hearing room when they were reaming various candidates and accusing them of having strong faith. They did it with William Pryor, who was nominated to be on the 11th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, which he did win the nomination, but that didn't stop them from Schumer repeatedly questioning his deeply held beliefs, specifically his Catholic beliefs, and on it goes. You see where this is going. It ties into what we just talked to about with Frank, about this not the ability, don't you dare, hold a view that is opposing the political left, or there will be danger. You will be silenced. You'll be shut out. You'll be accused of being a hater and fill in the blank with the rest of it. Good morning for Dr. Robert Jeffress to join us. He is in the studio. He has just written a new book, which we are going to talk about. But Dr. Jeffress, before we do that, I want to know what you think about what just transpired in that clip.
Listen, I want to be very clear about this, Sandy. I had the chance to talk to the president and his team last week about this bigger issue of these federal judge nominees being blocked. Look, the reason evangelical Christians voted for the president by the widest margin in history was his commitment to a conservative judiciary, not just the Supreme Court, but the lower level courts where most of these cases are heard. He has fulfilled his commitment. He has made a record number of conservative nominations, but they are being held up, Sandy, by the conservative, by the Republican-controlled Senate Judiciary Committee. And the reason they're being held up is because of this arcane procedure known as the blue slip rule. And it is just a courtesy that basically says we are not going to have nomination hearings until senators from that state, Republican or Democrat, return a blue slip saying it's okay to hold these hearings. Al Franken has said he may not return the blue slip. He may hold up these hearings. Now, there's no law that says you have to return a blue slip. It is an arcane Senate tradition. And what I'm saying is, and I said to the president and his team, we conservatives are going to launch an effort in order to get the Senate to do away with this arcane tradition so that we can get these federal judges confirmed. And what I want to ask everyone listening to this program to do right now is to call Chuck Grassley. He is the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, and say, we voted for President Trump to get these nominees confirmed. Do away with the blue slip rule and let these hearings begin.
All right, that's a good word. And I think you're absolutely right. With so many battles to fight, this is another good one. The blue slip rule, it is ridiculous. And it is exactly as you just said. I just spent yesterday all day in meetings in D.C., Dr. Jeffress, and there's so much to be exorcised about. And you and I, because we both, I don't put myself in your position, so I don't mean to, you're a pastor of a huge church, and God has called you to be a pastor. I'm a radio show, talk show host, but I love the Lord. My life is committed to Him. And yet I'm so concerned about what's going on in the world, as I know that you are, and you've received a lot of heat because of that, as a matter of fact. But I do want to turn the corner in our discussion this morning, because you have written a new book, and I want us to talk about it, because I think it's a good time to talk about heaven. I really do. You know, I was in our church recently. There was a summer musical, and it featured old gospel songs, and it was a lot of fun. You know, I remember those old gospel songs, but the thing that I noticed was that so many of them have the theme of heaven. You know, whether it's I'll Fly Away, Oh Glory, you know, so many of those old, and I'm not talking about the hymns necessarily, but the old gospel songs, it's a longing for heaven. And I was just thinking, You know, I think that in the early days of this country, there was more of a longing because there was less luxury, less ease of life. There was, you know, you lost children in childbirth, your crops failed, and all of these things. And people had a longing for heaven. And I'm wondering if you think maybe that the longing for heaven might just be returning with the troubles that we're seeing.
Oh, I think so. You know, some people would say, why write a book about heaven? You know, we're facing a nuclear conflict, possibly with North Korea, a nuclear hurricane bearing down on Florida, political chaos. Why talk about another world when there's so much going on in this world? Well, that's precisely the answer. I mean, the hope that we have is, as terrible as what is happening in the world in general, or perhaps your listener's world specifically is, there is a better world coming. And so this book, A Place Called Heaven, that I've just written, is a book filled with hope about what God is preparing for us. But Sandy, there's also a practical reason to be thinking about heaven. Just imagine that American Family Radio announced to you, Sandy, that they were going to transfer you to London, England in 6 months, and the move was going to be a permanent move. I imagine you'd be doing everything you could to find out about what life in England was like. You would be making preparation about it. You would be preparing for that future move. And the fact is, we are all going to be making that move, if we're Christians, to a new location. And the best use of our time is to be preparing for it. And what I'm doing in this book, Sandy, is I'm answering the 10 most frequently asked questions people have about heaven, like, what are we going to do in heaven? Will we know one another in heaven? Will heaven be the same for everyone? So I think you're right. There's never been a better time to be thinking about and preparing for heaven than right now, which is why I wrote A Place Called Heaven.
So that kind of answers my question about why you write a lot of books, by the way, dozens of books. And I want to say that Dr. Jeffress is the host of Pathway to Victory, which is heard every day on this network, or at least Monday through Friday. A wonderful show. I love your preaching, Dr. Jeffress.
Well, thank you.
I love your teaching. But I'm curious to know personally why did you speak about heaven yourself? You could write about a lot of things. So why about heaven right now for you?
Well, last year, my book was Not All Roads Lead to Heaven, to dispel that myth that is prevalent among so many Christians that all roads lead to God. It doesn't matter what you believe, we all end up in the same place. And of course, Jesus said there's only one way to heaven in John 14:6. And I thought, well, I wrote that last year about the way to heaven. Maybe it makes sense now to talk about what the destination is like. We've talked about the road to get there. Let's talk about the destination. And you know, Sandy, so many people have funny ideas about heaven, even Christians. We get most of our information from heaven, from Hollywood, TV shows and movies, or some of these fanciful books about people who died temporarily and took a tour of heaven and came back and wrote a best-selling book. I believe God's word is sufficient to tell us everything we need to know about heaven. It's the only reliable guide about what heaven is like and what we can do to prepare for it. So that's why I wrote this book, A Place Called Heaven.
You know, every time I read, of course, in Scripture, this is like a platitude, but honestly, it's true. I see something I never saw. You know, I've been a Christian since I was 9. I've been reading the book of Romans and this week, and I'm just thinking, oh, wow, I didn't know it said that. I see this. You know, it's jumping out at me. So my question for you is, you're studying all these scriptures on heaven, and there are tons of them overwhelming amounts of information in the Old and New Testaments. What this time?
Well,
came to you fresh.
You know, there are two ideas, and I think your listeners will be really interested in this, you know, about heaven that people really don't understand. And that is, first of all, we are going to work in heaven. You know, a lot of people, they don't get that excited about heaven, Sandy, because deep down they fear they're going to be bored for all eternity.
I know you're right.
You know, a lot of people, honestly, they think heaven is going to be one long, unending church service, and that sounds more like H-E double hockey stick to people than it does heaven, you know, if you know what I mean.
Yes, I do. Yes, I do.
And yes, we are going to worship in heaven. Worship like we've never experienced before, but we're going to do more than worship. God created us to be workers. All the impediments to enjoying our work will be removed. We won't have bodies that get tired. We won't have strained relationships. We will be working in heaven. So I talk about that in the book and what our work may look like in heaven. But you know, the other thing I think people don't really understand is, when we die, If we're a Christian, when we go to heaven, it's not somebody else that goes to heaven. We're the ones who go to heaven. That is, we retain our names. We retain our personalities. Our bodies are going to be recognized by other people. You know, people say, well, we know one another. Absolutely, we're going to know one another in heaven. So we have this idea that somehow when we die, we become somebody else. No, it is we who die, and our life is a continuum. It doesn't end the moment we die. It starts now and extends throughout eternity.
You know, the best way I ever had that explained, I was in a Bible study when I was about 21, and there was a girl in our Bible study named Pearl. And, you know, I think she was from Mississippi, now that I think about it. And she wasn't a brilliant person, but as she got into the Word, God began to work through her. And I will never forget what Pearl said. And she said, do you suppose that, you know how when you're a little child or a little kid and you are playing and you still look back on that, and you're still that same person? Your body has changed, but you're still that. And then as you get older, you look back 10 years ago, 20 years ago, you're still the same. You're the same. And she said, do you suppose that that's the part of us that never dies? And I thought, that helps to understand it, Dr. Jeffress. Our bodies are aging, getting older, transforming, our geography changes, but we still remember. We are still the essence of us never changes. Is that the part that never dies?
That's the part that never dies. And like you said, we get these brand new bodies that are free from the sin and the pain, the suffering of this life as well. So, you know, Sandy, I would just say to our listeners, this is a perfect time to be thinking about heaven right now. And C.S. Lewis had a great quote. He said, you know, the problem with most people is not that we think about heaven too much. We think about it too little. And he said, history has shown that the people who have made the greatest impact on this world are those who thought about the next world the most. And then he closed with that line, aim at heaven and you get earth thrown in. Aim at earth and you get neither. And I'm hoping this book, A Place Called Heaven, will help people aim toward heaven and earth as well.
You know, I actually think that this belief in heaven explains the difference right now politically between the left and the right, or the left and conservatives. And I don't mean liberal. I'm talking about leftists. I don't think they embrace anything beyond this life. And it changes the way we believe and think and act about everything, doesn't it?
Oh, it absolutely should. And here's the paradox, Sandy. Even though life is very brief and eternity is forever, what we do in the few years we have on this earth matters forever. I say in the book, what we do on earth reverberates in the halls of heaven forever. And I think as Christians, the fact that we aren't going to be here long, that there's a better world coming, ought to make us work that much harder to get the gospel out to as many people as possible. And that's why we're doing what we're doing right now and sharing the gospel, is because we know time is short here on earth and eternity is forever.
A practical question, and we only have a minute left. Are you going to be able to talk about this on Fox? And I didn't say you're a Fox News contributor. Probably
yes.
Most people see you there.
I'm supposed to be on Fox and Friends Sunday to talk about it if I don't get bumped because of the hurricane. But I'm scheduled to talk about it Sunday.
Well, you've already had your hurricane down there in Texas. Now let the people in Florida have theirs, Dr. Jeffress. You
that's right.
Shouldn't affect New York or Texas. Anyway, well that's
we
great to know.
Thank you.
Absolutely. And thanks for writing this book, A Place Called Heaven. I'm sure it's a great thing to share with your non-believing friends, too, and just people who are on the edges. And for those of you that are Christians who are uncertain about this, a great resource, A Place Called Heaven by Dr. Robert Jeffress, who's been our guest this morning. Dr. Jeffress, thank you so much. We'll hope to see you soon.
Thank you, Sandy.
All right. All right, well, this has been, you know what it's been. And tomorrow morning, by the way, Matt Barber will be hosting for me. And so you don't want to miss that, because Matt's always got great insights. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.